You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM.
Moving on, let's talk about Razer Gaming. This is really interesting, and Bob Diachenko once again gets a shout out here because he ran across a misconfigured Elasticsearch cloud cluster that exposed a segment of Razer's infrastructure to the public internet for anyone to see. It contained just a ton of information that basically any cyber criminal could use: full name, email, phone number, customer internal order ID, customer order number, order details, billing and shipping addresses, all that kind of stuff. Now, this Elasticsearch misconfiguration for made this public since August 18th of 2020, and it was indexed in public search engines like Google, and this is affecting around 100,000 of Razer's customers. Razer makes really cool products like really nice mice and keyboards and other gaming things. I actually use a Razer mouse on my day-to-day stuff, although I'm more web browsing in Excel than I am playing games. They're just really comfortable and really well built. So heads up if you've bought anything from Razer directly. And next up, we want to talk about Banco Estado, and that's in Chile. They are basically one of Chile's three largest banks, and they were forced to shut down all of their branches on Monday following a ransomware attack that took place over this past weekend. Now, details about the attack had not been made public, but a source close to the investigation said that the internal network was infected with the Revil, or our evil, ransomware hit. And so obviously, that's a very, very bad situation for them to be in as well. Nobody wants to go through that. That's a very serious issue. And so with that, we have two final things to talk about, and one of them is web.com. They are a massive, massive, massive registrar provider, and I will get to this. So if you've ever gotten your own website or registered a domain, you can go to web.com and all of that. And here's what I'm talking about and why this is insane. Cyber criminals access the contact details, including names and addresses of current and former account holders with web.com, as well as its two subsidiaries, Network Solutions and Register.com. Now, those three, web.com, Network Solutions, and Register.com, combined are probably the largest registrar aggregate on the planet. They are massive. Network Solutions is huge. The other two are big too. That is a very serious issue. Fortunately, no credit card information was compromised, according to a company statement, because they say that data is encrypted. But if the attackers were able to get in and get all of this information, if you have used web.com, Network Solutions, or register.com, you could have a very serious problem on your hands that you need to address. And I think you need to address that sooner than later. Go change your passwords and all of that, even though it appears that it wouldn't have mattered. It looks like they might have gotten into the back end, although web.com is not saying that. And finally, we have to talk about probably what is the most unfortunate, it's not a fun data breach. None of these are fun data breaches, don't get me wrong. But when we are talking about this data breach, it's unfortunate because the data breach is actually George Floyd. Now, I'm sure many of you will instantly know that name. And for those that don't, this was the man that had the knee on his neck for 8 minutes and 46 seconds in Minneapolis, Minnesota. He obviously died, and this kicked off all of the protests that we have been seeing for months here and all of that. Now, when Floyd, after this situation, immediately after this, Floyd was taken to the Hennepin County Medical Center after the just horrific and tragic event. And unfortunately, and you know where I'm going with this because this is Breaches of the Week, the Hennepin County Medical Center confirmed that Floyd's medical data was breached multiple times since his death. Now, Floyd's family attorney, meaning his survivor's attorney, Antonio Romanucci, said that Floyd's family was contacted via a letter by the hospital about these breaches. That is standard HIPAA compliance protocol. You are supposed to inform, obviously the victim of a data breach or an exposure in this case of that. But in this specific case, I really think they should have picked up the phone while they were sending the letter, and had that conversation directly. Now, according to the letter and according to Romanucci, and I quote, The letter said there were breaches of his data over multiple dates and that the employees involved are no longer with the organization. Now, the family doesn't know what kinds of records were accessed, which I believe should be his right under HIPAA compliance, in the same way that if you're alive, your doctor has to give you all of your medical records. That is your right. And I believe as a survivor, the benefit of HIPAA compliance would do that as well. The local news reporting there, KARE Channel 11, reported that the employees involved were fired for HIPAA violations, as I just mentioned. A quote-unquote number of staff members were involved in improperly accessing Floyd's medical records, according to multiple sources as well. Now, this is not the first time that we have seen something like this. So, the one that I think of consistently is, I believe it was UCLA Medical about 10, 15 years ago or so, when Britney Spears had checked herself into that facility. Multiple employees had accessed Britney Spears' personal information when she was registered into the system. And I don't know, and I can't remember, to be honest, so don't quote me on that. I can't remember if they were looking to try to sell that information to, like, the Inquirer or you know, basically a tabloid like that, or if they were just looking at it, you know, for interest's sake. These employees may not have been trying to sell stuff like this to the tabloids, but let's say there was, you know, they're working on this medical examiner's report and it says one thing or the other. If that leaks because an employee illegally accesses that, there could be some massive ramifications, not just for the Floyd family or law enforcement or the political divide, but also for the hospital as well, and on and on and on. Sometimes preliminary reports are not thorough. They miss things. And so if somebody gets a hold of something like that, you can jump to the wrong conclusions. That's obviously a very serious issue. You know, I think everybody's heart goes out to the Floyd family. I don't care what side of the politics, you know, you're on. I don't care if you love the guy or hate the guy or, you know, whatever your stance is. Nobody wants to see a family member die and then violate it after that in whatever way. I don't care who you are. So with that, those are your breaches of the week. You know, I'm glad those employees were fired, and hopefully, you know, the Floyd family will get some peace there. But those are your breaches of the week. Were you affected? Let me know.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for the deep dive segment, where we take a closer and deeper look at a cybersecurity, cyber warfare, or technology issue around us. And if you have any suggestions for a deep dive segment or something you'd like me to dive into, you can once again find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick A. ESP. Again, that's Nick A. ESP. Or you can send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. That's questions@securityfanatics.com. I am more than happy to take a look at it. And if it meets our standards, we are more than happy to do a deep dive on it. So let's begin.
And this week's deep dive, I think, is just absolutely critical, is an essential thing, and I hope everybody listens to this. And eventually, when it comes out, you know, the week after, because usually my radio show gets out on SoundCloud and iTunes and Spotify a week or so after they're here on the air, where you're listening to this. I think everybody needs to hear this. I think everybody needs to have this conversation. I think it's really important, because the question I'm asking today is, what happens if a national election is called into doubt? Now, here's what's going on, and this is coming from multiple sources like the New York Times, Washington Post, Business Insider, on and on and on. But before I begin, I want to say that this deep dive isn't about politics or the president itself. As I've mentioned numerous times before, my job is agnostic to one side or the other. I have listeners, followers, colleagues, friends, whatever, on both sides of the aisle. I don't care if you love or hate the president, love or hate the contender, whatever that is. I want to stick to the facts here as we know it, as they're being reported by multiple sources and all of that. And while the articles that I'm talking about are focusing on the 2020 United States election, I think that the issues these articles raise and the possible framework that Facebook is creating as a response to my question could be applied to any election in any country. That's right. We are talking about Facebook possibly ensuring that our national election isn't called into doubt, or at least combating it in a way that nobody else seems to be addressing, at least publicly. And so here's what's going on. Employees at Facebook are laying out a contingency plan or multiple contingency plans and walking through post-election scenarios for the United States 2020 presidential election that includes attempts by President Trump or his campaign to use their platform to delegitimize the results. And this is according to multiple people with knowledge of Facebook's internal plans here. Now, if you recall, in the 2016 election, then-candidate Trump, prior to Election Day, had started to call that election rigged before he actually won it. You might remember he was putting this on Twitter. He was saying this in interviews, at rallies, and all of that. But in recent weeks now, fast forward to 2020, President Trump, who obviously uses social media, he is a prolific tweeter, and so that is basically one of his largest platforms as a megaphone. He also has millions and millions of followers on Facebook as well. He has started to sharpen his comments about the election. He has questioned the legitimacy of mail-in voting. That has been just in multiple news cycles for weeks. He has suggested that people's mail-in ballots would not be counted, and avoided answering whether he would step down if he lost. His default position that he has basically said publicly when asked by reporters is, well, we'll see what happens. As opposed to, I don't believe in this election's legitimacy right out of the gate, or, you know, I believe that our election has integrity. Whatever that is, he's playing that very coy. And again, I am not necessarily sitting here, trying to say that what he's doing here is bad or illegal or whatever. I'm going to leave that up to you. This is actually the facts on the ground, as I've mentioned. Now, Facebook is also working through how it might act if the president tries to invalidate the results by declaring that the Postal Service lost mail-in ballots or other groups meddled with the vote. If you recall, that was part of the whole mail-in thing where, okay, well, maybe people are getting votes or mail-in ballots they shouldn't and illegally filling them out and sending them in and on and on and on. Now, Mark Zuckerberg, obviously Facebook's chief executive, who I've quite frankly gone after multiple times for multiple things, so I'm no fan of him, but here we are because Zuckerberg and some of his lieutenants have started holding daily meetings about minimizing how Facebook's platform can be used to dispute the election. They have discussed a quote-unquote kill switch to shut off political advertising after Election Day, since the ads, which Facebook infinitely does not police for truthfulness, and we're going to dive into that, could be used to spread misinformation. Alex Stamos, who is the director of Stanford University's Internet Observatory and a former Facebook executive, said Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube faced a singular situation where they, and I quote, have to potentially treat the president as a bad actor because he might be able to undermine the democratic process. Now, here's the kicker to that situation. Facebook may be in an especially difficult position because Mark Zuckerberg has said that the social network stands for free speech. Unlike Twitter, which has flagged the president's tweets for being factually inaccurate and glorifying violence on occasion, Facebook has said repeatedly that politicians' posts are newsworthy and that the public has the right to see them. Taking any action on posts from the president or his campaign after the vote could open up Facebook to accusations of censorship and anti-conservative bias. Now, if you recall, when Mark Zuckerberg went in front of Congress, he was actually grilled by a lot of the Congress people that actually knew how to grill them. One of those was actually AOC, or Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the congresswoman from New York City, who basically asked, and I think she rightfully asked this question. Again, I don't care if you love her or hate her, but the question she asked Mark Zuckerberg was, if she, AOC, were to put out a statement that said Lindsey Graham, who obviously is another member of Congress, but is diametrically opposed to AOC and her Green New Deal, if she were to put out something that said Lindsey Graham was a fan of the Green New Deal, Facebook would not censor that, kill it, delete it, whatever. And Mark Zuckerberg said yes. As an elected official, you can basically say whatever you want, even though it's demonstrably false, because Lindsey Graham has consistently been on the record opposing the Green New Deal. He is in opposition of AOC, but AOC could come and say, yes, I can do this. In the same way, Lindsey Graham could basically say, well, AOC secretly hates the Green New Deal or whatever. It goes both ways. That is the core of the problem here. But then, how do we gear up a general population that is divided politically and hearing from their elected officials potential hyperbole or false information when Facebook and others basically decide to let them say whatever it is, even though they know it's simply incorrect? And again, I think this applies to any election cycle for any nation that holds a democratic election or has a democratic process for electing their officials. In Facebook world, that right now, their current strategy, and they've just enacted this, means limiting the amount of political noise we will all see on their platform. They are looking to basically tamp down politics. And when you go on to Facebook, and if you have, let's say, more than 20 friends, and probably even if you have three, you know, if you start scrolling through what people are posting, you're going to get probably not just news articles from sources that might be very accurate to very dubious, but people are also going to go out and say, oh my God, we've got to get rid of this guy, or we have to reelect this guy, you know, whatever that is. There's just so much political noise out there. So Facebook has then taken the step to go a little further. The Washington Post just reported about a week or so ago that Facebook now plans to block new advertising the week before the presidential election. This is the first time the company has actually taken action to limit political advertising in the United States. And this is according to Facebook. If you recall, Twitter went ahead and said, we are just going to kill all political ads. It's like $10 to $15 million annually in revenue. We don't need it. We're just going to drop political advertising. LinkedIn basically has a policy of no political advertising or very limited. Google has an entire approval process that they have to go through. But Facebook is like, yeah, have at it. Just knock yourself out. Do whatever you want. And so for them to now just limit that the week before the presidential election is actually a very big step for them. Facebook also said that it would label posts by any candidate or campaign that tries to declare a victory before the final results are in, directing people to the official results from Reuters. Now, it will do the same for any post that tries to delegitimize the outcome of the election. For example, a claim that voting by mail could lead to fraud would be restricted or limited or killed. It's also started to limit users' abilities to forward articles on its messenger platform to large groups of people. So you can't privately blast, you know, your 800 super conservative or super liberal friends on whatever hyperbolic, whatever that you're talking about. They're starting to limit these kinds of things. The other thing I think we really need to talk about here too is basically how to start educating the population on what an election in 2020 is going to look like. But before we do that, Zuckerberg said of this, and I quote, "The U.S. elections are just 2 months away, and with COVID-19 affecting communities across the country, I'm concerned about the challenges people could face when voting. I'm also worried that with our nation so divided and the election results potentially taking days or even weeks to be finalized, there could be an increased risk of civil unrest across the country. This election is not going to be business as usual. We all have a responsibility to protect our democracy." And I think that is absolutely true. And that's what I was talking about, and basically about educating the general population on these kinds of things. It is a very, very important thing that we are doing here. And the reason being is that we are used to having an election that is unofficially declared the night of the election. When you're watching CNN or Fox News or MSNBC or ABC, NBC, you know, wherever you watch, they come to the night and they are getting voting tabulations in real time and then making a statistical calculation that says, oh, well, this election, you know, this candidate has won this state by 5% and all remaining votes. There's no way that the other candidate could catch up. Therefore, you know, this candidate has won this state. Well, we have a situation where the votes that are being tabulated in real time are going to be significantly more fractional to what they were in 2016 and earlier, because it's going to take days, possibly even a week, to calculate how much mail-in voting is going to take place. And on top of it, mail-in voting has pretty much been split, according to polling, down fairly partisan lines. More liberal people, more Democrats, more those that are going to be supporting Biden tend to be voting mail-in voting because, again, according to polls and results from places like Pew and others, they are taking the coronavirus and the protection against the coronavirus more stringently than those on the right who will show up, who will vote in person. And so we have a situation where we may see what experts are calling a blue wave come 3 days, 4 days, 5 days after the initial election. And so it may look like President Trump is winning in multiple states, like California, for example, which will take forever to count because California is so populous. But if his voters voted that day and Biden's voters get counted, let's say the day after, it is going to look like President Trump won California even as this election results get tabulated. There's nothing illegal with that. There's nothing wrong with that. We have done mail-in voting since, I think, before the Civil War in this kind of stuff. And so these are the things we have to be educating ourselves here. That really is. And I think that really underscores what Mark Zuckerberg was talking about. Now, the intense political stakes for Facebook were immediately underscored after he said that, basically about a week ago or so, as the Trump campaign basically took them to task for their new policies. Now, Samantha Zager, who is the Trump campaign's deputy national press secretary, said, and I quote, "In the last 7 days of the most important election in our history, President Trump will be banned from defending himself on the largest platform in America. When millions of voters will be making their decisions, the president will be silenced by the Silicon Valley mafia, who will at the same time allow corporate media to run their biased ads to swing voters in key states." Now, that is basically a demonstrably false statement by the campaign, because what Facebook is saying is that Facebook is not going to stop President Trump or Vice President Biden or the Libertarian candidate or the Green candidate or any of the other smaller parties from actually having their candidates talk and address directly to the general public. They are talking about cutting advertising from everybody. So nobody gets to basically run ads a week before the election on Facebook. And so that's equal for everybody, but they are not stopping the president or the contender from posting what they want to post, although they are looking, as I mentioned at the beginning, to flag, to possibly censor in that sense if things are demonstrably false. So if one of the candidates comes out and says, this election is rigged and it's awful and it's invalid and I think we need a do-over or this election should have never taken place, whatever that is, then Facebook is in the process of working on a plan of action to essentially kill that, flag it, say this is false, whatever that's going to look like. So for Ms. Zager, the Trump campaign's deputy national press secretary, to say that President Trump will be banned from defending himself on the largest platform in America is simply not true. He's in the same boat with Vice President Biden and all of the other smaller presidential candidates. So I think that's important distinction to be made, and I'm hoping that that's not signs and portents of what we're going to see from one of the campaigns leading up to this, where they're already laying the foundation for their followers to say, well, this clearly was rigged because Facebook rigged it. Now, this move that was announced, a couple of weeks ago by Facebook does not ban the president. Like I said, he's got 31 million followers on social media. It's just new ads. There was no immediate comment from Joe Biden's camp, the Democrats, though. But interestingly enough, the Democratic campaign committees joined the Republicans in objecting to the changes, though obviously for different reasons. Neither one want to see their advertising limited, especially when you've got really tight races. It essentially turns it into grassroots. Not many people, that are, let's say, aged 18 to 50 are really watching daytime television anymore. We're all on the internet. I don't even have a TV hookup, in my house. Everything's on the internet. And so if I'm going to get advertised too, I'm not going to go to tune into my, channel, whatever, like Thursday at 7 and see that campaign. I'm probably going to get advertised to on Facebook or Twitter or any other social media platform. So that is actually a very big deal. Now, I think the other part of this issue we're seeing here is a divide in the online platforms that basically the political landscape is using. We are starting to see a bifurcation of people based on political or ideological lines that have decided to basically claim censorship on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and some others, and then basically go to alternative platforms that have been very intensely growing during the coronavirus as people are finding new outlets that won't censor them to say whatever it is. So have you ever heard of the social media platform Parler or Gab or the YouTube alternative BitChute? These are very excellent examples of this, and I am still looking for one that is more on the further left side, but most conservatives or further right individuals in the political spectrum are really adopting these. You know, just for my own research purposes, I sign up for essentially every social media platform when it comes out. One, you don't know what's going to blow up and be the next Facebook killer, if that's even a thing at this point. But we also need to make sure that we are looking at, you know, all of these different platforms to see exactly what they're doing. And so I have signed up for probably 50 of these, most of them probably now defunct. But Parler and Gab I found very interesting in the sense that they claim privacy, they claim freedom of speech. And when I go through and I start looking at a lot of the people there, they are doing things like posting conspiracy theories, such as QAnon, for example, birtherism, 9/11, you know, truther, you know, kind of stuff, and on and on and on. And so that, I think, is very interesting. And I don't give anybody, you know, fault for believing what they want to believe. But then I have to start wondering, is that if we are basically reinforcing our confirmation bias by surrounding ourselves with people that only believe what we believe, how are we really making sure that we are being honest? How are we really making sure that we are getting a sanity check every now and then?
And thank you so much for tuning in this week. It was another fun show, and I think we covered a lot of really good stuff, and I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. It was a really good time, and I hope you keep tuning in. Thank you very much for listening to the Deep Dive Radio Show here with Nick Espinoza, and if you have any comments, suggestions, questions, absolutely anything, once again, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick A ESP. Again, that's Nick AESP, and you can always send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. Don't be shy. I love the feedback. We've been having a great time with the show, and as always, stay safe and stay online, everyone. Thanks for listening.